This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
It won't have escaped our listeners that Gonski 2, which is the latest proposal from the federal government on education funding, Blaise Joseph from the Centre for Independent Studies, it's a bit of a specialty of yours, Blaise. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Macca. How are you going?
Pretty good. Christopher Pyne, in a previous life, called Gonski Konski, as in it was a con. I'm a little bit of the opinion that the amount of money that we're proposing to spend on education is a bit of overkill. Considering that we have declining literacy and we've been spending significant money over the last decades on this, is money going to be the answer, Blaise?
Well, I think you're on the right track there, Macca. I mean, over the past 10 years, we've had an over 15% real per student increase in total government spending on schools. And at that same period, we've gone backwards in international literacy and numeracy tests. So obviously there's no clear link between the amount of funding we spend on schools and the actual results we get for students. So obviously the money needs to be better spent, and we need to look at a lot of things more than just the money. So there's really no evidence to suggest that what the government's proposing, which is another $24 billion over the next 10 years, is going to make any difference to student outcomes.
So before we debate that even further, could you tell us a little bit about what Gonski 2 actually means? Like, what will schools expect to see, and how will that money be distributed, and what can we expect to get for it?
So basically the whole point of Gonski 2.0 is that you have a consistent allocation of funding for schools. So basically, decades ago, a number of years ago, we had a whole lot of different arrangements. There was no consistency to how schools were funded. Then basically, the Rudd government commissioned David Gonski to write the Gonski report. He came up with a new funding formula. And under that funding formula, basically all schools were meant to be treated equally. But then when it was actually implemented by the Gillard government, basically it wasn't actually applied equally. There were still a whole lot of special deals with specific schooling sectors. The formula wasn't applied consistently, and basically a part of that policy was that no school would lose a dollar.
Yes.
So basically what the Turnbull government's doing now is they're trying to consistently apply that funding formula which Gonski came up with. So that's basically what's happening under this Gonski 2.0 reforms. And as a result of it consistently applying that formula, most schools are getting a significant increase over the next 10 years, and some schools are getting less of an increase, and then some schools are actually having their funding cut.
So with the increase, is that designed to bring schools up to a particular level of funding that somebody has worked out will deliver certain outcomes? How is that determined?
Well, I mean, that's a very good question. So basically, the Gonski report came up with this funding formula, and there's basically two components to it. So firstly, there's a base funding of per student funding, so that every school gets that amount per student. And then on top of that, there's extra loadings or extra funding for disadvantaged students. So students from lower socioeconomic status backgrounds or students with disabilities or Indigenous students and so on. And I guess that's basically the idea, is to ensure that every school has enough money with that base amount plus the extra money for disadvantaged students to have enough money to look after all the kids they have, even if they're disadvantaged. Now, I think the one of the major criticisms of this funding formula, though, is that the criteria for disadvantage is defined very broadly. So actually, believe it or not, the majority of Australian school students are actually considered disadvantaged and get extra funding under the Gonski 2.0 model.
So, look, that's very interesting. That, and I, you know, without having seen the numbers, I actually don't quite understand what all that means. But why is it that those people who work in the education sector are actually arguing that this is inequitable and that there are some sectors that are getting more funding? Well, not some sectors, that ultimately independent and Catholic sectors end up getting more than public schools. So what's that about? I actually don't understand that argument based on what you've said.
That's a very good point. Yeah, so basically what we're talking about with the Gonski reforms is specifically the federal funding for schools. Now, traditionally, it's always been the case that the federal government's the majority funder of non-government schools, and then state and territory governments are the majority funder of public schools. And part of the reason for that is basically because state governments run the public schools, not the federal government. And so with all this extra funding from the federal government, just because of that allocation, in terms of the percentage of the extra funding, yeah, you're right, that the majority of it or a large proportion of it is actually going towards non-government schools. So that's why the public system are a bit concerned about this, because they're saying, well, the federal government's increasing funding for non-government schools by a lot, but our states and territories going to do the same for public schools. So that's the complication there, and there's a difference between which governments fund the public system and the private system.
So there are two issues here. One is that we actually have a dual funding system, which of course, like in health, means that you end up with a bit of rorting or a bit of chasing of funding. And secondly, that there is a windfall gain for the independent sector as opposed to the public sector through Commonwealth funding.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing is, I mean, under this funding formula, independent schools are basically getting, were previously underfunded according to this funding formula, and so they're getting more funding now. And then the federal government's also increasing funding to public schools because they were previously considered underfunded according to this funding formula. So all schools are getting an increase, and it's just a question of the extent of the increase, if you like. So there's an argument over the precise numbers, but overall funding is going up significantly for all school sectors from the federal government.
We're speaking with Blaise Joseph from the Centre for Independent Studies on Gonski 2, TAS.
Blaise, by the way, we think you've got a great name. Blaise is such a...
Yeah, thank you.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
I'd kill for a name like that.
We think Blaise Musafiriadis goes really well. Goes really well.
Well, it's shocking with Blaise Joseph. Everyone thinks my name's Joseph, so I get emails saying, "Hi, Joe."
You would.
Like, A, you're wrong. It's Joseph. It's Blaise, not Joseph. And B, even if my name was Joseph, it makes you think you can call me Joe. I mean, seriously.
Now, Blaise, we've been talking about what this Gonski 2 formula is all about. I'm interested in your opinion. So what's your assessment of the of this particular funding formula? What do you think? Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's equitable? Do you think it's right?
Well, I think there's two problems with it. I think the first is that it's not actually evidence-based. So in the Gonski report, they came up with a very vague idea of what the formula should be, and they said a lot more work had to be done on it. That extra work hasn't been done. So the numbers are really plucked out of thin air. And it's not really evidence-based, needs-based funding in that sense. That it's not based on what schools actually need. The loadings for disadvantage, as I said, the extra funding for disadvantaged students is distributed across the majority of Australian school students. So the criteria for disadvantage is just not evidence-based. So that's the first fundamental issue, I think, with the funding formula. And the second one I would just say is that it certainly appears that the funding formula is just too high. When you have the majority of Australian school students getting extra funding for being disadvantaged, that means schools get a lot of extra funding for disadvantage than they actually need. So I think there is certainly a case to say that this funding formula should be reviewed, and it really needs to be based on actual hard evidence rather than just arbitrary numbers which are plucked out of thin air.
So $24 billion over 10 years, Blaise, and you say it's not evidence-based, nor probably even in a lot of cases needs-based. $24 billion is a lot of our money. You know, my money, your money, TAS's money, Peter Hitchener's money, everyone's money, to do it. So why are they doing it without evidence? I mean, I know...
And who's supporting this?
I mean, the government supports it, but I mean, you know, they're...
Yeah.
You know, there's more factions there than there are eggs in a dozen boxes. So who's actually supporting it? I mean, why are they doing this?
Well, so I guess the main upside of the Gonski 2 thing is that it's a consistent funding formula. So I'd say it's wrong, and I'd say it's not evidence-based and it's arbitrary, but at least it's consistent. So that's, I think that's the main argument in favour of it, and I think that's why a lot of people are happy to say, well, look, it's imperfect, there's a lot of problems with it, but at least we're finally moving towards a consistent allocation of federal funding for schools, and we're ending all these special deals and random inconsistencies in the funding model.
It sounds.
I think that's the main argument for it.
It sounds to me a bit like a cargo cult. You know, all these school principals looking to the sky, waiting for money to fall down, with no evidence based around it. I mean, we've actually got a question from a listener, Tass. Do you want to... it's a bit of a long one.
No, you go for it.
Okay. It's from a primary school principal. He says, you're right in questioning the value in the increase in education spending over the last 10 years. He says, much of what was spent under the Rudd package went into often questionable buildings. He said, it's the quality of teaching that's the biggest determinant of student learning outcomes. So he said, I've been advised that over 10 years, his small primary school will get an additional $1.2 million, but as it's federal money, it is still up to the state to allocate it, which may or may not reflect the wishes of the federal government. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So basically, the way schools are funded, the federal government doesn't fund a school directly. It funds the system. So, for example, the Catholic system, it hands over a pool of money, and the Catholic system can distribute it to its schools however it wants. Same as state government. So it'll hand over a pool of money to the Victorian government, and the Victorian government can allocate it to the state schools however it wants to allocate it. I think that does actually make sense, because obviously at a local level, you're quite better able to understand. Yeah, you understand how better to allocate the money. But yeah, the principal is absolutely right. It doesn't, just because the federal government has notionally allocated a lot of money to a particular school, doesn't mean that that's actually going to eventuate.
Well, that's an important nuance that I wasn't aware of.
I wanted to throw a bit of a spin ball in here. I'm not necessarily an advocate of this, but a lot of education strategists and experts have talked in different countries about vouchers. So that a child gets effectively a voucher. Let's say it's $100 a term, and that the child's parents can decide which school their child will go to. Obviously, it can't all go to one school. There has to be some accommodation and compromise there. But also that the student at a private school gets $100. Now, if there is significant disadvantage, that voucher, if it's used at a particular school, might be $110 or $120. If there's a significant advantage, if you're going to, I went to Trinity. So Trinity, you might cut it back to $85. What do you think about that as an idea, or is it too cumbersome?
Yeah, I mean, vouchers already exist in a few countries around the world. So Chile, Sweden, a number of states in the United States already have them as well. There's definitely pros and cons. So there's some evidence that it increases student outcomes. There's other studies suggesting it actually hurts. It hurts students because it involves a lot of moving between schools. But I think overall, on a principled level, though, I mean, I think it certainly has some merit in that it's simple, it's transparent, and it's fair. So you can see exactly where the money's going. The money follows the child. The money follows basically goes with the child on the backpack as it goes to school. And you can see exactly where the money is going. And obviously, that's genuinely needs-based funding, because the voucher would be higher for disadvantaged students, be lower for more advantaged students, and we basically leave it up to parents to decide what's best for their child. And certainly, I suppose there's conflicting views on this, obviously, but in my view, I think you're far more likely to have a parent know what's best for their child than to have one centralised authority deciding what school is going to be best for them.
Have you ever seen the Yes Minister episode about education, Blows?
Oh, yes, great. Yes.
Isn't it wonderful, you know, satire and comedy as real news? Just before we close, if you were the Education Minister, or if you were the Treasurer, how would you, if you were bringing down a funding package for schools, what would you do that's different?
Right. Well, I think the first thing is really to come up with an evidence-based policy. So you have to have a look, go into schools, see exactly what they need. For disadvantaged students, come up with a series of programs and then estimate the exact cost of that of those programs to help those disadvantaged students, and then you give schools money based on that. So the money going to schools is actually based on what they need for the children, and it's not just based on some arbitrary funding formula completely disconnected from what's actually going on in schools. I think that's the first thing. And the second thing is what is as well, I think we really do need to try to, in my view, the federal government really does need to try to decentralise it a bit more. I think there needs to be less direction from the federal government. I think there needs to be more more flexibility given to state and territory governments to run their own school systems in accordance with what's best for local need. Because, I mean, for example, the ACT in the Northern Territory, it makes absolutely no sense that you have the same school funding model for the ACT as you do for the Northern Territory, simply because of geography and demographics and so on. So I think those two things, I think having an evidence-based education funding model, and I think decentralising it a bit more so it's more appropriate for the local need.
What an interesting concept that funding should be evidence-based.
Yeah. It's radical, yeah, it's radical.
Now, you're an ex-teacher, aren't you, Blaise?
That's right, yeah, that's right.
So, you know, you bring a degree of knowledge to it. Look, I want to thank you for your time this morning. I know Saturdays are very busy for you. I want to again thank the Centre for Independent Studies for, you know, putting you in touch with us again. Thanks for your insight to that. It's been very interesting. We've had some good feedback from our listeners. And as I said, I want to thank you for your time and thank the Centre for Independent Studies for, you know, supporting your work and, you know, allowing those views to go forth. So thank you.
Great. Thanks, Macca.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.